I first met today's guest at a reading retreat in Virginia. Yes, a reading retreat. Those exist, and they are magical. They are. We had only known each other for a few minutes when El Casamano told me the story about how she blew up her life as a real estate agent, as a breadwinner, as a mom of two kids, and moved to Mexico with her entire family to try her hand at writing a novel. I love this story. It gives me chills, I tell it to people all the time, and it inspires me to keep going and creating and inventing and trying new things, because I think a lot of times as women, we need permission to do things. And stories give us that permission. Elle is the New York Times bestselling author of many, many, many books. Her Finley Donovan series is one of my personal favorites, and I gift it to almost everyone that I know. Today, Elle is going to tell us a little bit about that moment when she did blow up her life, when she did sell everything she owned and move to the jungle of Mexico to pursue her dream. And then we'll also talk about the tribe of women Elle found to support her, because none of us can do this alone. We can't. We can't. We need each other. Hello. It's so good to see you today.
It is amazing to see you. It's been too long.
Oh my God, it has been too long. I mean, it's just, this is just like the exact breather that I needed, is just to like sit and shoot the shit with you, one of my favorite authors and hardworking ladies in the world. So ever since we met, we first met in, and I feel like I know you because I love the Finley Donovan series so much, but since we met in real life, I have been thinking about your personal story, and I will tell you that as I've gone through the roller coaster of ups and downs and hard times of publishing The Sicilian Inheritance, you have just been this shining beacon of light for me. And I go back to the things that you told me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like I feel invigorated again and excited, and I needed you to know that you did this for me while I was embarking on my tour. You made me feel amazing right before I went on tour.
I am blown away and honored. And it is lovely to hear it because, you know, I think you're doing so much of the same for me as I'm watching you on this wild adventure. You are working harder than anyone I've seen work in this industry. And to see all of it coming together, like the rubber hitting the road and everything is working, is such an inspiration. And there have been days, you know, these last couple months have been hard work for both of us. And there have been days when I just look at it and I'm like, I can't do it today. And I look at you and I'm like, I can do this today. Look at what Joe is doing. I can do this.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I love a mutual admiration society. It brings me so much joy. It really does. Well, I wanna start out by telling our listeners the story that you told me about how you started writing books in the first place and how you blew up your life and how your mother helped you, because we talk so much on this show about how it really takes a village for us to do anything. Because I've been telling your story over and over again. I was driving to Midtown Scholar in Harrisburg the other day with another author, Jenny Herrera, who wrote The Hunter, and telling her your story. And she's like, I love El Casamano's books and I didn't know any of that. And now I love her even more.
I love it. Oh, that's awesome. It is kind of a wild and unique story. And I love to tell it because I do think so many of us need to hear, you know, that we're not alone in this. And while not everybody's story, a lot of people's story is not going to be like mine, I think we all struggle with so many of the same things, so many of the same obstacles. And so I do love sharing this story because I think people do find inspiration and hope in it. And that's something we can all give each other.
Yes, 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 and yes. So let's start at the beginning. Where were you before your life as an author?
Yeah. So, before my life as an author, I spent more than a dozen years doing real estate sales and marketing and, you know, building a career out of that. And I was very successful. I like to look back and say I had a fantastic, solid career. I was very good at what I did. I trained other people to do what I do. I You know, I had a fantastic, robust clientele. I had a team of people working under me. I was very successful. I was the breadwinner for our family, and I was miserable. I had two small kids in elementary school at the time, you know. I think they were probably 5 and 8 when I started down this road. And I was feeling like I just kind of hit this wall where I knew I wasn't doing anything I wanted to be doing with my life. I wasn't where I wanted to be. I didn't know what I wanted. I just knew I wasn't fulfilled. And I was exhausted. I was working way too hard. You know, in real estate, you're working nights and weekends, and that's when your kids are off school and your family is home. And I felt like I wasn't being enough of a mother. I felt like I wasn't being enough of a spouse. I wasn't being enough of any one thing to feel good about where I was in my life. And so that's more or less where I was before I started writing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that was about, 2010, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. And I think this is not uncommon. This is not an uncommon place for women and the mothers of young children to find themselves in at a certain point. You've worked, you've done the things that we've been told to do. You've started a career, you've had the kids and gotten married, and you just feel like you haven't done the things you wanted to do, and that you're not getting to spend your time the way that you want to be spending your time. And I hear that a lot. I hear that from a lot of women. And then I also hear, but I'm scared to try anything new. But I don't think I can. I don't think I could take that leap. And you took the leap.
Yeah. And I think it's even more than I'm scared. I think for me, it was guilt. Mm. I would feel selfish imagining anything for myself. We are conditioned, I think, so often, especially as moms, and our whole identity is wrapped up in giving of ourselves for the people that we care for. You know, the people we're responsible for. You know, we're every drop of blood in our body, every piece of energy that we have, you know, goes into taking care of or nurturing or handling things for someone else. And so there's this guilt, in addition to the fear, I think there's this guilt that comes with just the notion of trying to picture something you want just for yourself.
Yeah.
And so that for me, I think, was the biggest stumbling block, was, you know, this feeling like I shouldn't, like I should put my life on hold because this is what I am. I should be where I wanted. This is what I thought I wanted. And it is. I loved my kids and I love my family. But I wouldn't, you know, I couldn't accept the fact that there was something that I wanted for me too.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel that so hard. I mean, I feel weird guilt and shame around so many things that I don't think I should feel guilt and shame around. I felt terrible leaving them to go on that book tour last week. Even though, you know, Nick was here and my mom was also here and many a babysitter were here. They were fine. They were fine.
Yeah.
And I want them to see their mother go out and do things she loves and work and have purpose and create. And still every moment that I was away, I felt guilt. It's irrational. It's wholly irrational.
And yet it's ingrained in us, you know,
ingrained in us. Exactly. Yeah. And I, you know, I moved back to Philadelphia because my mom's here. And also it's the greatest city in America. I love it here, but we have a lot of help. And if I didn't have my mom helping me with the kids, and she takes the big kids on overnight, she sleeps here when I'm out of town, I don't think I could do the things that I do, because it takes such a village. It takes so many people to do this. And your mom is the one that like helped you decide what to do next, right?
Yeah. I mean, like, I've always been a little fearless in terms of change and trying new things. And so it wasn't really the fear of doing something new. It was like there was something else holding me back. And I think in hindsight, I needed someone to give me permission to do something for myself. And she was that person for me. So we were, you know, we had gone down to visit. My parents at the time were living their awesome retirement life in the Mexican Riviera. And we went down for a very short vacation to visit because, you know, that's all I would give myself was a very, you know, tiny couple of days off from work to take the kids down and see their grandparents and sit on the beach for a couple of days. And while we were there, you know, my mother looked at me, she said, you, I think she just kind of looked at me and realized I was about to hit a wall, that I was, you know, she basically told me, she said, you're going to have a midlife crisis if you don't stop and figure out a way to, you know, get yourself out of this place that you're in. And she said, why don't you bring the kids this summer, take a summer off work, bring the kids to me. You stay here for the summer and write a book. And at the time, I thought that was, I mean, I couldn't, it felt like it was coming out of left field. I was like, where is this coming from that you would even think? I said, this is the most selfish, irresponsible thing I could imagine doing. I can't just take off work. Like I'm like my money's paying most of the bills. I have clients, I have customers, I have people that, you know, that I'm training. I can't, like, you know, the kids have school, we've got all this stuff going on. Like how could I upheave my life just so I can take 2 months to do something that frivolous? And she said, just think about it. And I went home, took the kids home after that vacation. I did think about it and I kept thinking about it. And then I couldn't stop thinking about it. And 2 weeks later, I called her and I said, we're coming. And I don't know what happened in those 2 weeks, except that something she said felt like she had given me permission to make a decision for myself, to do something for me. And maybe that's all I needed, was to hear it from someone else that it was okay to be selfish, that it was okay to take a break, that it was okay to ask for help, that it was okay not to do everything on my own. And like something clicked and I said, we're coming. And that summer I took 2 months off of work and that's what we did.
Oh, I have heard this story now and I have told this story to other people and I still get chills when I hear it, because the way you describe having permission and that you felt like you needed permission and then you did do it. You went down there and you let your mom watch your kids and you wrote every day, right?
Yeah. It was funny too, because, you know, I got down there and it's tempting to want to not do what you're down there to do, or you tell yourself you're going down there to do, because the beautiful beaches and beautiful weather and the kids are off gallivanting and having a wonderful time with their grandparents every day. And all I could think was, gosh, maybe I could just enjoy a 2 month vacation. You know, and in addition to being the person who gave me permission to do this, she was also my accountability partner. Every morning my mom would take the kids, and I had two little boys who were very, very high energy kids. And so, you know, every morning she'd take the kids and put them in their bathing suits and take them to the beach, and she'd take them to the pool and she'd run them ragged and, you know, feed them and dress them and bathe them. And she'd send me upstairs to this little dark room in the attic. It was the only quiet place where I could get, you know, some writing done. And she sent me up there every day while she took the kids out to have fun. And she said, go write your book. And at the end of every day, she would wait at the bottom of the stairs. And, you know, she'd have a hot dinner on the table. My kids were bathed, ready for bed. You know, like there was nothing I needed to do. All the mom load had been done for me. She had washed their clothes. She had prepared their meal for the night. She had, you know, done all of the tough stuff. And I could come down at the end of the day and she would stand at the bottom of the stairs and hold out her hand and ask for my pages. And I would have to, at the end of every day, send her my chapter that I wrote. Mm-hmm. And so in 2 months, the very last day we were there, I typed the end of my first horrible, terrible, most horrible, sloppy, awful novel ever written.
Mm-hmm.
But it was finished. I had done it.
It was finished.
It was the most amazing feeling in the world. Like, what a sense of accomplishment to have done it. And it felt so good. But there's no way I could have made that leap, that I could have done even that much without accepting help.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes accepting that help is the hardest part of it.
Yeah. Especially if we're, you know, I'm the kind of person who has to control everything. Like I have to, I have to feel like I have my finger on the pulse of everything. And it's very, very hard for me to ask for help or accept help. And so that was a really big step. And I think she knew that. And she just sort of took the reins and just she just handled mom business. She did what moms do. She handled the business, but she did it for me and she did it for my kids. And that was really the only thing that made that leap that summer possible. And that was what opened the door to what would become a whole life upheaval and career change.
Well, I want to take a quick break here. And when we get back, I want to hear about that life upheaval and career change.
Definitely.
And we are back. So you've written the first draft of this novel, and you're still down in Mexico with your mom, with your family. What happens next? What do you do with the draft of that book and your and the rest of your career?
Yeah. So this is, you know, this is where the fun started. We came home, and I have to preface this by saying that I'm married to the most supportive, amazing partner ever. He and I have been together since I was a teenager. We were in college. And he's never batted an eye at a single one of my ridiculous, impulsive plans or anything I've ever suggested or done. And so, of course, like when I told him I was taking the kids to Mexico for the summer so I could, you know, take 2 months off and write a book, he was very supportive. He looked a little like a deer in headlights at the time, but he was very supportive. And he said, of course, that's if you feel like that's what you want to do, we'll do it. But at that point, I came home and I could see the relief just wash over him when he asked, great, you finished. Is it time to go back to work now? Because at the time, you know, my career was sort of the one that we were really relying on. And and so he, you know, very gently asked if I was ready to go back to work. And I said, I think we should talk about that because I really had a good time doing this. I feel like I've found something that I want to do. And I feel like there's something here. And he asked a question at that point that was probably the most important question anyone could have asked me. And he said, well, how do we know if you're any good at it?
Oh.
And
the people in your life give good advice and also ask good questions. I will tell you that.
Yes. And it's like, it was so honest. Like, you know, he said, are you good at it? And I said, I don't know the answer to that question. He said, well, how do we find out? Like, how do we find out if this is something you can do? And that was the question that I needed to hear. That was the permission, again, that I wasn't willing to give myself to keep pushing forward. Mm-hmm. And so that prompt, how do we find out what's the next step? What do we do now? Was just the kick in the pants that I needed to go do my own research. So I got home and I had this manuscript and I wasn't entirely sure what to do it with it. I had no training in this whatsoever. My degree was in psychology. I'd been selling houses for 12 years. You know, I had no clue at all what I was doing. So of course I did, you know, what anyone would do at that point. I jumped on Google and I did a ton of searching into the industry. What's involved with publishing a book? What is a literary agent? What do they do? Who are the publishers? How do I start? Where do I start? And that process led me to my first writing workshop. And there happened to be literary agents and editors who were going to be there. And I was very, very fortunate in that my first experience with that was really positive. And I got some great feedback that encouraged me again to keep pushing forward. And so I took that very messy, awful, horrible first draft and ended up, you know, I'm still not entirely sure how it happened. You know, I'm sure luck and timing probably had a lot to do with it, and a very, very solid query letter. And I ended up landing with my first literary agent. And at that point, I think my husband and I both kind of looked at each other and we knew that maybe this was possible. I hadn't yet let go of the reins of my career in real estate. I had a foot in both worlds at that point, but this was a very promising sign that maybe there was something here.
I love that. And I also love what happens next. You've got this agent. You did well, and you also, you know, let me back up for a second. You did the work, and I mean, the publishing industry seems so daunting from the outside. It's like, how does this even work? How do you even begin? And I did a book event at Midtown Scholar in Harrisburg, the one that I was driving to with Jenny the other day. And instead of doing like my regular like talk about me and the Sicilian inheritance, which, you know, I'm sure everyone is sick of hearing about me, I wanted to do an event called How to Write and Publish Anything, where people could just ask me questions and it could be more of like a town hall. And
yeah,
we talked a little bit about Sicilian, but it was so vibrant and exciting to hear like what other people wanted to know about this industry. It was so cool. And the biggest question is, most people think that you can just go directly to a publisher with an idea and don't understand, you know, you have to query agents and then be chosen by agents in a process that is weirdly similar to Sorority Rush.
I love that analogy.
And then, you know, then the agents go to the publishers. And so, yeah. So even once you get to the agent, like what happens next?
Yeah. You know, there's so many misconceptions. And I can see why. I mean, it's not the most transparent of industries, and there's so few people that are doing it successfully that there are not a lot of resources out there. There's, you know, and I think the internet makes it so much easier to do the research.
So much easier, yes.
Still, there's this demystification that happens when you really do a deep dive. And so a lot of people really, I think, don't realize how challenging it is, how hard it can be to make that leap. And so, yeah, it was a process of kind of like you said, Sorority Rush. You know, you make your dream list of agents and try to find the right fit. And then you polish up your work and try to put your best foot forward with this very professional business letter. It's essentially the query letter, which is the pitch to try to see if someone will want to take you on. And I was very, very fortunate that one of the agents I had queried saw something in this manuscript. You know, it clearly needed a lot of work, but she liked the voice, which is another word that we hear a lot, you know, that needs some demystification also probably. But, you know, she liked the voice of the character, and I guess in the way I was trying to tell this story, and she saw something in it, and she was willing to take a chance on me.
Which has to, I mean, what was that moment like after all of this, after you've, you know, blow up your life to go away for the summer, and then to have someone validate you in that way and kind of answer the question, how do you know if you're any good at this? What was that feeling like?
So there's so many moments about motherhood that ground us, even in the, you know, when something's going so right. And we want it so badly just to take a minute and let it go to our heads. There's always something grounding about motherhood. And I think for me, it was when I got that call that this agent wanted to take me on. If I remember correctly, my kids had the stomach flu.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So I've got the cordless phone propped up between my ear and my shoulder. And I've got one of them going from one end and one of them going from the other end. And I'm trying to be really, really excited about this. And at the same time, you know, there's always this doubt in the back of your mind kind of shadowing every success, you know, with, are there more important things I need to be worrying about? You know, should I really be taking this time to celebrate? And so that day was just a blur, you know, it was a blur of just, you know, laundry and doctor appointments and spit up and taking people's temperatures. And I think at the end of the day, I was able to sit back and still feel like I had accomplished something for myself. Like this was huge. This was the first massive hurdle I was going to have to overcome if this was going to be a reality.
This totally reminds me of when I found out that we sold the Sicilian inheritance to Maya, my editor at Dutton. I was in a Burger King bathroom. You know, much like the Humpty Dance, and just staring down a 2-year-old on the potty who refused to poop. And I had to pick up the phone because it was my agent. And I pick it up and I'm talking to her and I'm like, oh my God, you know, the book got sold. And at the same time, I'm just like dead staring, my child being like, poop, poop, poop. And she did it, like freaking magic. And I'm like, this is how women get it done.
Isn't it funny how all of our great successes are still like, there are little milestones in there that are so interwoven in our roles as moms. And I've always wondered, like, do men in their careers have those same experiences, or are they able just to enjoy that moment without sitting on the floor of the Burger King bathroom with their kid, like trying to push one out? Like, what? I mean, like, I can't even imagine.
We are going to take one more quick break here. Be right back. Under the Influence is brought to you by Quince. So I just got back from book tour last week, and right before I left, I got one of the Quince Mongolian cashmere sweaters in the mail. I got it in this really, really sexy green color. And I had all of these dresses planned for the Sicilian Inheritance book tour events. And then I ended up wearing this green cashmere sweater from Quince, like at least half of the time that I was doing book events and podcast interviews, because it looked so good. And I kept getting all of these compliments on it. And you know that I love compliments. So I was just very excited to add this into my book tour wardrobe. The best part about this sweater, about this 100% Mongolian cashmere sweater from Quince, is that it is $50. It's $50. Quince is luxury at an affordable price point, and I love that about them. All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. You deserve nice things. I tell you that every day. And you deserve to be able to indulge in affordable luxury. So just go to quince.com/influence for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's a really long time to return something. I mean, like, really long. A lot of places won't let me even return something I bought yesterday. That is Quince, quince.com/influence to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/influence. Under the Influence is brought to you by Honeylove, my favorite shapewear of all time. It really is. I can talk about Honeylove all day long because it's truly that excellent. Yes, the Honeylove bra is the one that I'm wearing in my author photos. Yep, just wearing a bra under a hot pink blazer, because you know what? I've got some big Sicilian energy. I do. And Honeylove gives me that. It gives me this confidence to just strut around like a bold, brash goddess. Yeah, I know that sounds like hyperbole, but have you seen my other photos? They are freaking hot, my friends. They are. And as I start packing for the Sicilian Inheritance book tour, you know that I'm bringing my Honeylove shorts and my Honeylove bra, because I'm going to tuck it all in where I want to be tucked. I have so many gross old bras in my drawers that I know it's time to throw them out. It's time to make space. And I am vowing to spring clean my underwear drawer. I am. I'm going to finally get rid of that Patagonia bra from 2012. If you too are going to spring clean your underwear drawer, why not grab yourself some Honeylove? You can get 20% off your entire order with our exclusive link, honeylove.com/influence. So to support our show, check them out at honeylove.com/influence. Treat yourself to Honeylove. And we are back with Elle Cosimano, one of my favorite people in the world and the author of the best-selling Finley Donovan series. When we left off, we were sharing stories about writing milestones amidst the madness and insanity of mothering many children. I do not think that my husband marks every career milestone with a scene from a Burger King bathroom or holding a puking child. I think it is a woman thing, and I think it is a mother thing. And, you know, I've reached a place of acceptance with it too, that I am both of these things, that I am a mom and I am a writer. And I actually know that there's a few female writers out there who really don't like to be asked about how they do both things, how they parent and also have children, because male writers don't get asked that question.
Right.
And I get that. I do. But at the same time, if we don't talk about it, if we don't talk about how we juggle these things, then younger women who want to do these things won't have role models. They won't see how you're doing the labor and how you're doing the work. And maybe it's not fair that we get asked the question, but I like to share how I'm doing both of the things.
I think it's also important, the more we talk about it, the more people recognize it.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And I think that's important too. It's easy to kind of push those roles aside, or, you know, cover them up, or not talk about how taxing they are or the impact they have. And then I think in doing so, sometimes we tend to continue burdening ourselves, like, because we're letting people continue to put things upon us, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where I think sometimes it's important to put it out there and say, hey, this is also happening in our world all at the same time.
Yes.
And just be out there with it. And yeah, I can't imagine my work day not intertwined with all of those other parts of who I am and am expected to be.
Exactly. Exactly. And I like what you said about showing the labor. Like, I think when we don't show the labor gets discounted.
Yes. Yes. You said that so much better than I did.
And that's exactly how you said it. That's exactly how it came to my ears from you. So, you know, and so, all right. So you get this agent and you've got a manuscript, and what your agent, you had told me this story, your agent connected you with other women, which is another part of this story that I love so much. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So like I said, I had no idea what I was doing. This is all very, very new to me. My book was a mess. My agent was struggling a bit with me because I was having a very hard time understanding why it was a mess and how to fix it. And she, while she was a very savvy business person, she wasn't necessarily a great writing teacher, writing coach. And we kind of hit this point where she was getting frustrated with me, and I kind of felt like she was on the brink of giving up. And I was getting frustrated, feeling like maybe I couldn't do this. I couldn't get this book to a place where we could actually do something with it. And she said, what you need are some critique partners. And at the time, I didn't have anyone. There was no one in my world that I could share this experience with other than her, you know. And so she put me in touch in an email thread with two other debut novelists who she had recently signed on as clients, who were in a very similar place in their lives. They were both mothers of pretty young kids. They were both coming from completely different careers. We were all very, very new at this. None of us had degrees in this. None of us knew what we were doing. And I think we were all to some degree struggling, and we had no support system. And so she put us in an email thread together, and she said, you know, Ashley Elston, Megan Miranda, El Casamano, introduce each other. You all are now a critique book. Go fix each other's books. And it was kind of this terrifying moment, like, kind of being thrown into a party and not knowing anybody. So we spent a couple of tentative emails back and forth introducing ourselves and chatting. And what we realized very quickly is we had so much in common. We were at these very similar points in our lives with a lot of the same fears and hesitations and the same challenges in terms of how do we do this?
Right.
And we bonded almost immediately over that and very quickly started sharing work and realizing that this was not only a compatible working relationship, but it was a really compatible friendship too. And we became very, very close. And that was back in, I guess it was 2011, maybe. Probably late 2011 or mid 2011. And we have been writing partners and critique buddies ever since. So, but not only that, like, you know, I can't think of a day that goes by when we're not texting each other or talking about, you know, work-related things or how our kids are doing or what it was like to send them off to college. And, you know, like we've been there for all of it. And it's been such an amazing and beautiful thing. And when I look back, there were so many times, and you know it, there's so many times when this career just wants to crush you. This industry wants to crush you. It is designed to weed people out. And it can be soul-battering.
And there were days when I thought to myself, why am I doing this? You know, why am I beating my head against the wall? Why am I cutting myself open and putting my guts out on the page for the, you know, for the world to abuse for and some, you know, at the beginning for, you know, pennies? Like, why did I do this? And then they were the ones who always reminded me why. There's a community here. They were the ones who, on the hardest days, made me laugh, reminded me about the fun parts of this job, and encouraged me to keep going. And in some cases, kicked me in the ass and told me, you know, just go back to work, like keep working, keep writing, you've got this. And they've been throughout this entire journey, sort of the joy, but also the backbone for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that my female friends, and especially my female writer friends, and namely like Glynis McNichol, who's on this podcast a lot. And I have to get you a copy of her new book. I think I mentioned it to you. It's the memoir where she went to Paris the summer after the pandemic as a single unmarried woman and just had a lot of sex and ate a lot of cheese.
I love it.
I know. I mean, it's just everything I want in a book, just sex and cheese. And she, she's my backbone. She keeps me going on days when this is hard and soul crushing. And I mean, I think a lot of industries are difficult, but, you know, not every industry are you kind of putting yourself out there in a way like this, where for people to critique you. I mean, I made the mistake of reading a podcast review today, which was dumb, and I'm not letting myself read any Sicilian Inheritance reviews. I'm not. Yeah. The women that have supported me and the women that have supported me in the past 2 weeks, this community of authors is really amazing. And you are one of them. And I've just gotten notes when we didn't make the New York Times bestseller list, which, you know, it's very hard right now. And I worked so hard to do it, not for any ego reasons, but because, you know, it makes it easier to sell another book. It makes it easier to do the things I want to keep doing. But I heard from, you know, Hattie Henry and Fiona Davis and all of these incredible women that I look up to as authors who've been here to support me. And I just, yeah, that's the importance of women supporting other women and building each other up. It's one of the main themes that I like to write about. And it's so important. It's the one thing I want to talk about literally every day in every podcast episode.
And I think that was really, for me, so much of what became the heart and soul of the Finley Donovan books. I mean, those books were inspired by a moment with my critique partners, but the relationship has inspired kind of the soul of the series. It's really the heart of what those books are about. It's about, you know, women lifting each other up and supporting each other unconditionally. And the importance of that, like what we stand to lose when we don't have it.
Yeah.
And it was sort of my homage to that relationship.
Yes, I adore Finley and Vero's relationship in the Finley Donovan series. And what I like about it, and I like a lot of things about it, they're very funny. You make me laugh out loud on the page all the time. But it's the support, and it's the fact that you write about their friendship the way that a lot of writers would write about a romantic relationship, in that you give it the same weight and the same stakes and the same consequences. And I don't think we see that enough on the page, even though I know that so many of us women are living it in real life.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because that's one of the biggest questions that I always get at events is, we had a couple of very spectacular romantic interests in the book. And of course, everyone wants to know who's my favorite. Are you team Nick? Are you team Julian? Like, and my answer is always, I'm team Vero. Like, at the end of the day, this book is we've got some great relationships going on, because in these books, we explore every facet of what it means to be a woman. And those are parts of that. But the heart of the story is the friendship, and the real relationship at its core, at its center, is Finley and Vero's. And so for me, at the end of the day, you know, if as long as the two of them end up on the couch together,
eating bonbons and watching TV and remembering that they're each other's ride or die. Like, I've done my job. Like, I feel good about that. And I think so many readers and so many women have found that that surprised them, like how much they also maybe needed that too, to read about that. Because the romance is a lot of fun. And it's, you know, it's, I love to read romance. It's one of my very, very favorite genres to read when I'm reading for myself. But I think there's something exceptional and extraordinarily unique when we also look at the depth of a great friendship and and what it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Have you watched the TV show Younger?
No.
Oh, it's good. Oh, if you want like just bite-sized candy about the publishing industry, it's delightful and delicious. And
okay.
I binge watched it because they hired me to write a book that had been mentioned in the TV show, which is just like a sassy, trashy romance. And it has a love triangle in it. And people are constantly asking me the same thing. Are you team Charles? Are you team Josh? And I'm like, I'm team Liza and Kelsey. Like, I want their friendship to succeed. Yeah. I'm always like rooting for the female friendship. Everything about our talk today just inspired me. You continue to inspire me. You do. You do. I feel like we were destined to meet in Crozet, Virginia.
Well, here's the thing again. Were we destined, or was it women helping other women? Because if you think about it, it was a phenomenal woman who connected us.
It was a phenomenal woman who connected us. Flannery Buchanan, who launched the Bluebird bookstore, connected us. She has been my champion for the past 2 years. Did I tell you that she drove up here?
Yes.
With all of the copies of The Sicilian Inheritance so that I could sign them. And she has just been hand selling that book. And she told me from the very beginning, she's like, you two have to meet. You two have to meet. And then she made it happen. So it wasn't destined. It was designed by another extraordinary woman. Exactly. Exactly. I love it so much. I love it. I love it. I love it almost as much as I love the Finley Donovan series, which I have bought for so many of my female friends. It's now one of my go-to birthday presents.
Oh, I love hearing that. I love hearing it. It's a book that kind of that series is just one that begs to be shared. It's one that it's almost more fun to read it with a friend.
Exactly. Exactly. And so, I've been just handing it out like strangers hand out candy to children in the 80s.
Thank you.
Everyone that I know, because I love it so much, and I love you, and I will see you very soon.
I cannot wait. I love you too. It's been wonderful.
You're the best. Oh, and that is all we have for today. Elle brings me so much joy. I love her story about blowing up her life, about being given permission, about how she thought she needed permission, because I think a lot of us feel the same way. I think we have big dreams and we want to make a change, but we often, as women, need someone else to tell us, it's okay. Try this thing. I will help you. And yeah, I still get chills when I hear her story. I also love the part where she is paired up with other women writers who are also switching careers, and they just lift each other up and support one another. And it is gorgeous and beautiful. If you happen to be looking for a cozy mystery that is also hilarious and just a fun read, please pick up the Finley Donovan series. There's many books that you can binge right now. They are everywhere where you buy books. And you know what else is everywhere you buy books? The Sicilian Freakin' Inheritance. Get it now. Get it while it's hot, my friends. I'm heading to Puerto Rico for my husband's 50th birthday. He's 50, and now I can officially call him an old man, and I'm very, very excited about that, because everyone thinks he's younger than me because he has such great hair. Yeah. Yeah. It's annoying. All right. Go have a great day. Bye, guys.